Welcome back, everybody. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 79. And today I am going to talk about puppies. I've been promising that for a while and keep getting caught up in other things. So today's the one about puppies. And I don't know if I'll be able to get the whole topic done today because I try real hard not to go on and on and on. And so you fall asleep or, you know, have to get out of the car or something. So I we'll see how this goes. But there's a whole lot to talk about, and I have to make sure that I stay brief and don't, you know, beat on a point too much. But the whole thing about puppies, for me, is an extremely critical time in the dog's life. Maybe, in a sense, the most critical time. Just like with humans, you know, from the time they're babies till they're 6, 7, I don't know exactly what the psychologists say, but you kind of build the human as much as the external input can do at a fairly early age. And it's extremely true with little dogs as well. And if you think about it in their own world, in the natural world, you know, when they're born out in the prairie or whatever, the plains of Africa, and, you know, they could be killed at any time. And so they need to sort of learn the ways of the world, survival, and then perhaps even thriving if possible. They need to learn that early, early on. And so these guys are programmed to gain a lot of understanding about things. I didn't say skills. You shouldn't have an obedience champion at 4 months old. Okay, that's just beyond the scope of what their mind can truly grasp. But to gain an understanding of their place in the world and the way with which they interact with the world, that's what's happening at this point. And it's very, very important. And I think a lot of times, many times, if not almost all the time, that sort of escapes people when they get their puppy. And they have whatever is in their mind. Oh, good, we got this. And fill in the blank. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a superstar. This is going to be the best hunting dog in my group. You know, or this is going to be the coolest dog at the soccer game. People have these ideas about what they want. Kind of like pick your ideal spouse. You know, what color hair, how tall, how this, how that. You know, that's nice, but that's not real. And it's the same with these puppies. It's really important that when you're going to get a puppy, and let's just say for the sake of you're listening to this podcast, a performance hunting dog, whether you compete or don't compete, that doesn't really change anything about what I'm saying, but you have a dog that's going to serve a purpose in your life. There's some things to look at before the dog even comes. Because first I'm going to talk about where the dog is coming, into your home, into your world, your family. You know, maybe you have a family, parents and 3 kids, or maybe you're by yourself, or maybe you have whatever your living situation is, this environment into which the dog is going to come and the people with whom the dog will interact. If everyone that's involved in this, and let's just use a family, since that's the majority of what I deal with these kind of dogs. You know, we're getting this dog, okay, whoo, everyone's thrilled, and everybody has an idea, like I said. You know, whoever's going to go use the dog for the performance things, you know, they've got, okay, I want to have the best dog, better than everybody else's out there. I want to have this dog be so cool and get his titles or find the most birds or whatever it is. I really want this. And then another person's like, oh, good, a dog I can go jogging with. This will be good. It'll be protection. Then somebody has that. And the other one is, you know, well, now I'll have company. I can hang out with the dog all the time. So I have a companion. And to another kid, it's like, ooh, this is going to be fun. It's like you're getting them the coolest toy ever. Because this one interacts and it's cute. It has puppy breath and it plays games and it chases things around and it plays tug of war, heaven forbid, and all this kind of stuff. So you get all of these ideas about this dog and then you bring it in, and this poor little thing is subject to everybody's different way of looking at it and everyone's a different way of interacting with it. And that's a little chaotic on a teeny tiny puppy brain. So when you do chaotic things with a developing canine brain, that's what you're going to develop, is chaotic ways of thinking, chaotic ways of interpreting and processing, and chaotic ways of reacting. So as whatever you bring them into is what's going to grow in that dog. So if you got a dog coming, if you're someone listening and we got a puppy coming or it just came, ideally, something that works very, very well is if everyone sits down, every involved person sits down and says, all right, what is this puppy? What do you think? What do you plan on doing? What do you want to enjoy with this dog? How are you going to interact? What's the deal? And, you know, little kids go, I don't know, it's just going to be fun. So, again, it's kind of like a cool toy. And then if you have somebody that's like, doesn't really want the dog, I don't know, it just has to stay out of my way while I'm in the house. Okay. Everybody should be able to air their feelings and their perceptions on this to help this little dog. We're doing all this for this puppy. And talk about why you're getting it and, you know, what everyone's role is going to be in it. And you can't make this, and I don't want to get on this one too long, but parents, you can't make it a horrible thing. You know, you bring this puppy in and the kids cannot have it in the backyard. If your friends come over, you have to put it away. You know, and suddenly the dog becomes kind of a negative thing because there's so many rules and all the fun is gone. So you got to be careful about making the puppy negative. That doesn't happen very often, but I've seen it sometimes in families. Or one of the partners wants the dog and the other one doesn't, but just kind of acquiesces and now they have the dog, and so this little thing becomes a focal point for resentment between people. That happens far more frequently than you might think. So everybody needs to get their feelings aired, what they'd like, what their willingness to do, what their level of participation is. And then you can talk about things that are good for the puppy and things that are not so good for the puppy. So that's a very important part of this. Part of this also is, okay, where is the dog going to sleep at night? Oftentimes, there's a big fight over that. Whose bed? Or should it even be a bed? Or is the dog going to sleep in a crate inside the house? Is the dog going to sleep in a kennel run outside the house? Get that kind of ironed out before the puppy ever comes. Because once that little hummer's there with the puppy breath and the adorable face, if you don't have the rules already agreed upon, hands shaking, you might have some tears and some fights on your hands over that. So where's the little one going to sleep and you know, who's going to take care of it and who is responsible for this and that? In total fairness to the dog, and also to keep there from being, you know, hard feelings and people upset, that's a really good thing for everyone involved, so they get there and they do. Everyone should, who wants to be a part of this dog's life, should be, but they just have to kind of agree on stuff and understand why these things are important. We've had a lot of puppies through our lives over the years, and we had two little kids, and of course they're sort of professional dog kids because they really understand the whole game, and so it wasn't too much of a problem. But we had our own personal dogs. You know, I had a little field champion wiener dog. We had a Great Pyrenees. My husband had a Rat Terrier. Those were dogs in the house and with us. And believe it or not, you interact the same with them as we do other people's dogs that we have in training. You know, with respect, understanding what their role is. So it's not, it's completely realistic to have anybody of any age constructively adding to the development of the dog. But you have to let everybody get their say and try to make them understand why certain things are important. So I want to talk about certain things that are important when you bring a puppy into your world. So I know what puppies mean to a lot of people. You know, that's probably one of the most positive little beams of light that comes into your life in the beginning, those precious little things. And it's just hard to not just love them to death. But a puppy is not, let me say what a puppy is. A puppy is a little creature, one of God's creatures, with a heart and a soul, and they're put here for a purpose. They want to be a part of something greater than themselves, and they want to be significant and they want to contribute in the long run. Same as us, if you think about it. I mean, they're not like us, but they are. If you look at the dogs in their natural world, right, they tend to be in groups, generally, not always, but generally in groups. And you need to fit into the group and you need to contribute to the group. If you do not hunt or bring in food or, you know, have babies or do something to contribute to the betterment of the dogs, you are not there that long. And so it's important to them, built into the way they function and they process, you know, to be a part of a group and to have something to contribute and to be significant in that. And when they get a little older and they begin to be able to develop skills and the performances and the things that you want them to do, a sense of mastery. That sounds kind of odd because I don't think canines think mastery like humans do. But a sense of, I do this and I do it really well and I do this for the team, that becomes very important. So when you bring a little one into your family life, even though it's precious and cute and it bites everybody and it tears up stuff and it chases everything around and chases a cat all over the place, you want to look at this little thing for, what do we want this dog to become? What is the future of this little guy and what are we working toward? Because again, in their natural world, that happens day one. As soon as they're up and around and can see and move around, they need to start acquiring the skills of getting along successfully in their world. And it is important for puppies to do the same thing. And you have to go through in your mind what those aspects are. What does this dog need to be able to do? So I'll throw out my thoughts on that. So when you have a dog, for whatever purposes you have, but when you have them, they, for one, need to be respectful of everybody and everything around them. That starts from when you bring them home. They need to be respectful. They cannot take the old dog and tear his lips and ears to pieces. I've seen that, you know, people go, oh, look what he's doing. I would never, ever allow a puppy to learn to do that. When they do it 3, 4, 5 times in a row, they got it. That is a habit they've got and they've learned it. Where if you stop it before it can really get very initiated, then you can stop that stuff. So they need to have respect for you, for the other animals, for the kids, for your furniture, for your rug. And that's something that needs to be taught from the very beginning at the level that a very undeveloped little canine brain can understand. They also need to learn to cope with things that they may or may not like. And this is probably one of the ones I see a real deficit in when I get dogs in for training. Because when you get a little puppy home and it's fun and you turn it in the backyard and it chases the robins and the squirrels and the other dog and it plays, and they're just constantly having fun. And so there's just, you know, basically chaotic thought in their mind. Oh, this is fun, that is fun. And they never learn to focus and be a student. This is where you begin to teach them that stuff. So if they just never have times where they have to deal with stuff, then they'll never learn to deal with stuff. And so when they go to school, that is when you start teaching them things, when they're able to teach them, if you've never taught them to bear down and have to pay attention when they don't want to, then you have a real battle. And I get those dogs in for training frequently. When somebody tells me, okay, we didn't do any training with the dog because we didn't want to screw them up, I'm in trouble. Because that means this dog is basically just freewheeled. And now I have to teach the dog how to think in an entirely different way. Versus dogs, which when they come in for formal training, have already learned about learning and already learned about paying attention and already learned that there are people in their world who are important and have to have attention paid. And as a puppy, that's where you start that. And so you don't just give them, you know, wild, chaotic time. In those little developing brains, if the majority of what they do is just frolic and run and chase the other dog around and chase the birds and constantly, you know, basically developing an ADD situation where every new movie thing is exciting, and that's what they do the majority of the time, that's what's going to grow. And that's what you're going to have to deal with. Versus a puppy who's certainly allowed time to frolic in the backyard and chase butterflies and do whatever it is, but that's not the majority of the time. Then other times it has quiet time in wherever its place is, whether you have a kennel run, which I like better than crates because then they can move around and drink and stuff, but a place where they're quiet time by themselves. That should become a part of a puppy's life the day you bring them home. And I've said that before. It's not cruel. And if they howl and make noise after a day or two, they won't. And then you can also teach them not to make noise as well if they continue to do that. But it's much easier to teach dogs, here's how life is. Sometimes it's joyful and playing. Sometimes it's quiet and thoughtful. And other times it's just you and me. And we do things together. And if that part is the highlight of their day, their time with you, that's what's going to grow. So you're beginning to develop a relationship. You're beginning to develop your importance as the head guy in this pack. And in that time together is where you begin to teach them how to learn things. Now, the way that I have always liked to do that with puppies, any breed, any condition, anywhere, is to go out when they're 8 weeks old and you get them, go out on a walk through some place that's safe that they are off a leash. And they learn to stay with you, watch for you, pay attention to you. They learn that's their job. That's their first and foremost job. And when you start them that way, and you do it ideally every day, by the time that dog is 4 or 5 months old, you are everything. And you can turn them loose and they don't run away and go chase things because you have set up this connection between yourself and this puppy. And before any other connections got set up, it's hugely powerful. I have talked about this and had it in the book and had it on the Facebook page and on this podcast before, how anyone that's ever done the walk with a puppy started at the beginning absolutely swears by it and tells everyone else they need to do it. It's one of the most powerful things you can possibly do. Now, if you live in downtown New York, that could be a little tough because you can't just go through a park where there's, you know, dogs without shots and people and crazy stuff. But you need to, if you got a performance dog and you can take them somewhere, set them down and take off walking for whatever period of time is safe, but really tires out the animal. Humongous numbers of things have been accomplished. One, you are the pack leader. You are the thing on which the focus should lie. You should be followed. You are important. Then if you have a retriever, you throw a couple retrieves in the middle of this. It's just great. Not very many. You don't get dogs exercised by the retrieves. You get them exercised by walking. And as they get a little bit older, the walk has to get a little bit longer. So you mentally and physically tire them out, all the while creating this extremely strong relationship between you and the other dog. And again, the questions I always get, is it okay if I take the other dog? Well, only if you want those two to hook together and you be incidentally the provider of this opportunity for them to walk together. In other words, no, just you and your dog and not other people and not your phone and not, you know, headphones, none of that. But this is the time where on the dog's level, you two connect in a way that is the most meaningful for that little puppy. And you go out and do that every day, 10 minutes out, 10 minutes back in the beginning, pick the dog up, and then, you know, all kind of things happen. They just sit there and cry, right? They sit there and cry. So carry them to the end of the walk and then walk back towards the car. And then they're going to come with you. In other words, outwit the dog a little bit. Sometimes they're frightened. Sometimes they have no context for walking in somewhere they've never been before. So here's our first learning opportunity, right? Now you're going to learn to be somewhere new and do some things that you've never done before. Every dog has that in their lives. You teach them that at 8, 9, 10 weeks, you got it forever. And it's very, very helpful. You know, or maybe they're, I don't know, they're afraid. Or they make noise. I've heard that. Oh, they just sit there and make noise. Then pick them up, take them halfway out, set them down, come back, let them make noise all the way back. About day 4, 5, 6, 7, that will probably stop. So you're teaching your dog that you're the center of the universe at this point. And you're also teaching them how to cope with things that may be a little overwhelming. Not too overwhelming, not actually, don't have somewhere where a Rottweiler is going to come and attack the puppy, but a place where they just learn, I got to work through the grass and the bushes and through the stream and over the rocks, and I've got to get with this person. And you do that from the time they're 8 weeks till they're 4, 5, 6 months old. You have a very strong dog who's completely connected to you, that doesn't even know about running off, that doesn't know about not staying with you all the time. And I mean, you're halfway there in terms of a whole lot of training things. So that's where you establish but you got to decide who's going to do that. You can't have everyone doing it, because dogs tend to have their alpha guy and then their secondary guys. So you got to find out the person who's going to do this, because it is a real connection thing. You get to understand each other without ever making a sound. When you go out and do this, you're not talking to them, you're not whistling, you're not giving hand signals, you're just walking. And on a nonverbal level, which is how these dogs communicate, you guys spend your time together and you will learn volumes about your puppy. So that, I would say, is mandatory for puppy owning. Everyone should have to do that. And once you do it for, I don't know, a month, I don't have to sell you on anything anymore. It's a hugely powerful tool. Then you bring the dog home, right? You put them in their quiet spot, drink a water, you know, a snack or whatever if they're still that age. And now you give them quiet time. Maybe at the beginning of the day or the end of the day, you can have a little bit of time with everybody, you know, running around in the backyard with the other dogs or with the family. That's all important. But you want the highlight of their day to be this time where they're connecting with their primary trainer. So that's really, really important. Now, part of that, if you do a lot of physical activity with your puppy, the free feeding thing that I know a lot of people feel strongly about does not fit in, because you don't want to have your dog just having eaten, you know, a big belly full of food and then go take them out on a 20-minute or 30-minute walk. That's just not healthy. So generally, when you have a dog that's going to be doing learning things and performance things, you cannot just let them have a belly full of food. Ask your vet about it. It's not a good idea for a real active dog to be active with their intestines full. There's a lot of problems you can have with that. So you want to feed, in the morning, and you certainly want to feed in the evening. I know sometimes people feed 3 times a day. I've always been a 2-timer. Unless I was having trouble keeping weight on the dog, then I'd add an extra one. But puppies should not be huge, fat, roly-poly, nor should they be with their hip bones and their ribs all exposed. Just kind of like people. You don't want them hugely fat, obviously, but you certainly don't want them emaciated. You want them, you know, where they've got just a little bit on them because they're puppies and they need that to grow and stuff, but not carrying a bunch of extra weight because they're busy growing and developing muscles. So don't follow the directions on the back of the food bag. And don't follow the directions of anyone who has a big obese dog, but do it as if you were in perfect health and had really no extra weight and ate only what you needed for energy and nutrition, and that was all. And that's the same thing with these little puppies. So that brings me to the food thing, the age-old question. People love to ask me, what do you think about treats? Because they want to see me get up on my soapbox and go nuts on this stuff. But food should occupy, in my opinion, a role of energy and nutrition for dogs. And unless we have fear problems, in which case food can sometimes be useful, not at all. Absolutely not at all. Because when you are teaching a dog, and I know this flies in the face of so many trainers and so many of the, you know, the Petco dog training classes where they have that 2-gallon jug of bacon bits there, and I chuckle whenever I see that, because when you bring food in, for one, that's a bribe, Now it works. It works. If you sit down, I will give you this. And if you lay down or do whatever the command you're trying to teach, I'll give you a treat. That does, you know, they'll do it for that. And then I've heard people have told me, well, then you just wean them off of it. Well, man, that kind of sucks, doesn't it? That's like doing chores all the time and you get a dollar every time you take out the trash and pretty soon they don't give you a dollar anymore. But you're still supposed to take out the trash. Probably some dogs it works great and other times it doesn't. My experience has been that I don't bring something in between me and that dog. I don't do it. I don't bring in, unless there's fear. Like I said, when there's a dog that's afraid of stuff and food helps, then I'm all for that. But if I'm teaching a dog how to learn, if I'm teaching a dog how to be a student, particularly a little puppy, when I'm teaching that, I am going to do that between the two of us. It's like, all right, I want you to learn how to walk on a leash right now. And I know it just seems terrible. I have this thing around your neck and it's like, oh my gosh. But, and you know, so no, don't bring food in there where they're going, oh, if I get this awful thing around my neck, at least I get something to eat. That is not the kind of relationship I want to have with a dog. So when I'm going to teach a dog that, okay, now you're going to walk on a leash, might be 12 weeks old or something, whenever you need it, that's when you do it. So I'm going to put a leash on you. We're going to walk. And I'm going to teach you to begin to trust me when I ask something new of you that you don't understand. And I'm not going to bribe them for that. I'm not going to use food so they equate, okay, anytime she asks me something, I get something to eat, so I'll do whatever. That is not the kind of relationship I like to have with the dog. I don't ever want to have something external. I want it to be between us. So I'm going to teach this little dog to walk on a leash. So I'll put a leash on it and wait and see. Okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to panic and go nutso? Or are you going to say, what are you going to do? So first I let the dog tell me what they think of it. Right? And then I'm going to, you know, if they're all crazy, I told the big story of Naked, the puppy that I raised here a year ago. And I put her on a leash because I was needing it. She'd taken the walk every day of her life. And I put her on a leash and she literally flipped out. And I told the whole story of if people were looking at me, they would just think that, you know, I was doing something terrible because this dog is rolling like an alligator, rolling on the ground and then jumping up in the air and flipping upside down and trying to hook her legs on the leash. I mean, she thought I put a, you know, boa constrictor on her or something. So I just let her do that. And if she was just going to throw herself on the ground, I'd keep moving. So it was quite a sight. But anyway, that was a rather extreme reaction to putting a leash on. Told me that maybe I should have done it just a little bit sooner so she wasn't quite as big. But anyway, so I'm just going to teach her. I'm not going to ever get riled up. I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to get frustrated. But you are going to have the leash on and you are going to move with me. And so I didn't use a treat. I didn't use anything else. And maybe, you know, if I'd had a treat, oh, at least walk 10 feet, oh, food. You know, then she's always looking for what's in it for me. Again, not the relationship I want with the dog. So I would continue, you know, I'd move a little bit. And if they got panicky, I'd understand. Okay, but I wouldn't ever yield. Until finally, through patience, just patience, I would get the dog to walk with me somewhat. And Naked, we walked about, half a mile, however far it is, to the mailbox. And she just fought with me all the way there and gave up and healed all the way back. And from that day on, we were done. So she was an extreme case. You know, I should have filmed it, but then I don't want people. I mean, here's a dog rolling on the ground. You thought I had given her some kind of terrible poison or something. But I won, and I taught that dog at that point. Okay, sometimes I'm going to ask you to do things that you may not like or understand. They will not be cruel. They will not be painful. But it's important that you learn them. And so you do. And so she did. And then she was fine after that. So it's important that while we're doing these other things, we teach these little guys how to learn. Sometimes they have to wait. If you have another dog and you have them both in a crate in the back of your vehicle, and you get the puppy out, take your walk, come back, get the other dog out to go do some hand-thrown marks or something, yeah, the puppy needs to learn to wait. You can't sit there and scream and yell and make all kind of sound because it's not you. Teach them. Sometimes it's you, and sometimes it's not you. And one of the reasons that you want to do this, if you're ever going to send your dog to a trainer, you don't want them mad because your dog comes in and then just raises holy you know what because they're some other dog is being trained, not them. But more importantly, because very few people listening to this are doing that, if you ever have to go on, you're going on vacation or you have to go in the hospital for something and your dog needs to be somewhere, whether it's a boarding kennel or the neighbor or someone's coming to your house, wouldn't it be great if your dog went, oh, okay, well, I guess this is different. So we'll just, you know, find out what the rules are here and go with it. It makes it so much easier on the dog, and it makes it so much easier on other people who have to work with your dog when you're not there, live with your dog, take care of your dog. It's amazing at a kennel, you know, when somebody's dog has never, ever, ever been left alone or ever had to be, was not the main thing going, and they come in and they just set up an incredible ruckus. They are just demanding, you know, to be this, I do not like this. And they're just loud and obnoxious and they'll knock you over and you can't get them back in. And that's all because nobody ever taught them, hey, sometimes you know, you're in a situation that is not the one you want to be in. And you deal with it anyway, just like you and I have to do in the world. And when they're little puppies and you just teach them not by any toughness, not by any pain infliction, but just by teaching them to cope with situations, to cope with being alone, to cope with being put away, to have to wait their turn, that's hugely important later on, hugely important. So structure, when you're going to bring your dog home and you've talked with everybody about what we're going to do and not do, structure's important. I didn't say rigid structure, but structure. This is where the puppy's going to sleep. And you know, when the dog is a year old or 9 months old and the behavior's great, now we want him sleeping with the daughter, that's fine. But if you teach a dog that it moves from its mother's bed to somebody else's bed, and then sometime when it can't sleep in that bed, then it's very upset. So I have always, with every dog I've ever had, first taught them to sleep by themselves and be okay. And then later on, they can, even my wiener dog, when I first got him, he slept with us in the bed. I will be honest about that. But when I first got him, he didn't. He actually stayed in his crate until he learned how the things were and he learned how to interact with the world of being here in the retriever world and being a little tiny guy. And after, then he got all kind of privileges and then he was like king of the heap. But everything was earned. And if I ever was gone and had to put him somewhere else, he was okay. Because he had learned, you know, how to deal with stuff. It's just a little tiny dog. So these guys can do that. So you want to have some structure. Start out by teaching them how to cope first before you break all the rules and teach them that they rule the universe and get to do whatever they want. Have a job for them. Have a job for your dog from the very beginning. I don't care if it's a Lhasa Apso, you know, or a champion hunting dog. They need to have a job. And in the beginning, that could be, okay, you get up, you go outside, you relieve yourself, you come in, you know, maybe have a small breakfast or no breakfast, depending on your walk. Now we're going to go take the walk before you go to work. So you load up and you go to the open space, the green belt out behind. You take a walk for 15 minutes with you. That's that puppy's job right now. Okay, we're going to go out and we're going to do this. And it's having a blast, but there's such a strong sense of purpose. And it becomes the highlight of that dog's day. And then when we come back, I put you away in your kennel run or where your space with some breakfast. And now you're quiet. And then a little while after that, somebody else gets the dog out. Takes it out in the backyard, you know, just enjoys the sunshine, maybe throws a couple puppy bumpers for it, you know, if it's a retriever or whatever kind of purpose your dog has, and that's all. And then they interact and socialize, and dog can't bite, the dog can't damage stuff, the dog can't destroy stuff, and then maybe put them away again for a little while, more quiet time. So you teach them there's always an end to something. There's a beginning and an end. And your peaceful time is quiet time. And you're alone with your own thoughts. And you learn to be okay by yourself. And you let all the training and the work that you've done, and every bit of that, the walk is training, the time out in the backyard, doing a couple retrieves, that's training. Let all that soak in. None of that is chaotic. There's no chaotic thinking in any of that. And so that is priceless, because as you begin to add the demands on this dog, the walking on a leash, the coming when called, whenever they can manage that stuff, when you begin to add that, it goes in easily because it's kind of the way the whole thing has been. But when you change the rules on them suddenly from do whatever you want, be loud and obnoxious, rip, you know, that's what puppies do. They just tear everything to pieces. Then you change the rules, that's hard and it's not fair. It's not fair to the dog, and it kind of makes a liar out of you. And so the easiest thing to do is from the beginning. If you got a chewer, you know, put some chew stuff in the dog run with it in its quiet time. Let it chew stuff there. Let it chew something. Give it things to chew in the backyard. Give it, if you're coming in the house, give it something to chew on so it's not eating the leather couch. Just common sense stuff. So these are just the thoughts before you even get the dog and when you do get the dog. So obviously this is going to be part one. We're going to talk about some specific things to do with these performance dogs, these retrievers, once you get them home. But that stuff isn't going to matter if you don't set up a learning environment and a reasonably structured environment so this dog learns that it's part of a system. It contributes. There are expectations, and the demands go up as you mature, and that there the great payback, what the dogs get out of this, is this belonging and this significance, and that they are part of something greater than themselves, and they have a job, and that they are important. They are not just entertainment fluff that everybody just laughs at and later gets mad at when it's destroying stuff. So first thoughts on a puppy. Like I said, the next time I think we'll go into specifics on things you do with these guys when you get them that will lend themselves to, you know, the performance things and also just being a wonderful dog to have in your life. So there we are with that. I've gone for 37 minutes now. I think that's long enough on this topic. And I'll be back soon with number two on what are we going to do with the pup specifically, you know, to build the future that we're looking for. So stay warm, everybody, and I will be back soon.